everyone. Welcome to Every Great Adventure Begins as a Dream, a podcast where I inspire you to get out there and see the world. I'm Donna, a baby boomer and somewhere in the vicinity of being a senior citizen. I spent nearly 20 years as a professional travel counselor helping thousands of people see the world. Prior to that, I was in the U.S. Navy, ultimately attaining the rank of commander. My first duty station was in Neamakri, Greece. Now that was a great adventure. I was truly living the dream. Although I've traveled a lot, there's still a lot of world out there for me to see. Since I'm not getting any younger, I've got to keep going to see as much as I can before I can't. So, let's dream together and plan our next great adventure. For more inspiration, you can follow me on my blog at everygreatadventure.com, where you can also see my travel photos. You can find me on Facebook, Instagram, and Pinterest as Every Great Adventure. Of course, you can always reach me by email. My address, Donna@everygreatadventure.com. Having been raised during the Cold War, going to Moscow was something I never in my wildest dreams imagined I would do. Then, in 1989, I sat in front of my television, mesmerized as we watched the Berlin Wall come down and East and West Germany were quickly reunited. Not long after, the Iron Curtain crumbled and the Soviet Union was dissolved. In 2007, an opportunity arose for Art and I to participate in a familiarization or FAM trip to Moscow and St. Petersburg, Russia. We jumped on it. Typically, when a travel agency is offered the opportunity to participate in a FAM trip, there's not a lot of notice. If we were lucky, we might get 4 to 6 weeks' notice, but most often it was 1 or 2 weeks. If I recall, I think this time we had about 4 weeks, which wasn't a lot of time when factoring in the visa application process, which also occurred over the Christmas and New Year's holidays. Completing a visa application is usually not difficult, but getting a Russian visa required filling out one of the longest forms I've ever encountered. There were a couple of questions on the Russian visa application that required a bit of thought and research on my part. First was military service. I don't recall if they wanted to know rank, but I do know they wanted to know when you were in the service and what you did. They asked if you had served in any wars, and if so, who was the enemy. Next was what weapons were you qualified to use. But I have to tell you, the question that really had us scrambling was which countries had we visited in the last 10 years and the dates. Oh my, we owned a travel agency and had traveled a lot in the past 10 years. How on earth was I ever going to come up with this list? I pulled out my current passport, which was only about 4 years old at the time. Then I had to dig out my previous passport, which thank goodness I had saved, and piece together our travels as best I could. Once the European Union came into existence, we found a lot of countries no longer stamped passports as you entered and exited, which made things a little more difficult. We had to consider our numerous cruises in Europe, Asia, the South Pacific, and Indonesia, which all visited a lot of different countries. I went to my computer and pulled up all my old photos, which helped me to get the dates of our travels. I managed to dig up itineraries of similar cruises which were sailing at that time, which assisted me in creating a list of the countries we had visited. Since I'm not actually planning a trip to Russia at this time, I was unable to open the current official visa application online. However, I was able to gather some information from CIBT Visa's website. CIBT states that each person must complete the application for a Russian visa online, and it will take up to an hour to complete. There are some questions that might not seem straightforward, so CIBT has provided additional information to assist in completing the application. For those of us in the U.S., the most difficult thing for us to do is enter the date in the correct order. On the Russian visa application, you must use the day, month, year format. If you're not paying attention, you can easily request your visa for the incorrect dates, which can cause major issues. Remember, if your Russian visa is not correct, you won't be allowed in the country. If you show up with the wrong dates on your visa, you'll just be sent right back to the U.S. You see, there's no in-country visa service available in Russia to correct the dates once you've arrived. We sent in our applications and waited. and waited some more. We didn't hear a thing. Art and I were really worried our military backgrounds would keep us from getting our visas approved. Since we still needed to purchase our airfare from Columbus to New York, we wanted to wait until we had our visas. In order to get a decent fare, though, we needed to purchase our tickets at least 2 weeks prior to our flight date. Finally, we just decided to go ahead and purchase the tickets to New York. We knew the price would go up dramatically if we didn't, so we took our chances. We kept in touch with the company we were traveling with, Israel World Tours, the same company that provided our trip to Egypt. They said not to worry, there was the Christmas and New Year's holidays to deal with, plus the fact that the Russian Orthodox Christmas was celebrated on January 8th. So they also had that holiday to deal with. Israel was confident the visas would come through. Just an FYI, Israel World Tours is now called Israel Israel and has refocused their offerings, no longer providing tours to Russia. A few days before our scheduled departure date, both visas arrived. We did a happy dance and then started thinking about packing for a trip to Russia in January. Now, that required a bit of thought. The picture in our minds was cold and snow. So we brought our heavy wool coats, hats, gloves, and turtlenecks, warm socks, and of course, boots. When we would tell people where we were going, we'd get the same response from everyone. Why on earth would you go to Russia in January? Well, you see, in the travel business, it's all about opportunity. Fam trips are usually offered in the off-season, so we weren't surprised by the trip being offered in the dead of winter. Sometimes when you have the opportunity, you just have to take it. Imagine our surprise when we landed in Moscow and found the weather warmer than it was in Columbus, Ohio. And to top it off, there was no snow. Even the locals said they were surprised with what a mild winter they were having. So we ended up being lucky. Upon our arrival, we went through immigration. I went through first with no problem. After I left, Art walked up to the podium. I turned around to wait for him. Art had his hat on, and the immigration officer, in a deep voice, gruffly said, "Take off your hat." Art complied. The officer held the passport up and looked from it to Art and back again. Then he said, "Ah, yes, that's you," and smiled. He handed Art the passport and wished him a good stay. It was nice to know they had a sense of humor. It was late afternoon by the time we arrived at our hotel, so other than the hotel tour and a welcome dinner, there was nothing else scheduled for that day. We stayed in the Ritz-Carlton, which was a first for us. It was beautiful, with fine finishes, warm and inviting, and as lavish as we expected. The hotel will be undergoing renovations through 2021, so I'm not sure how it will look when completed. The hotel is on Tverskaya Street, only a few blocks walk to either the Bolshoi Theater or Red Square. For sightseeing in Moscow, it's in a great location. Our first morning began with a half-day city tour of Moscow. We viewed the Moscow State University, housed on one of the buildings known as the Seven Sisters. These seven massive skyscrapers were all built in the Stalinist style between 1947 and 1953 and are found throughout Moscow. We also saw the Olympic Stadium and the Bolshoi Theater. We made a stop at Izmailovo Flea Market, where we were particularly impressed with the hustle of one young entrepreneur. This young man, maybe 20 years old, was operating a stall at the flea market. He had a great assortment of those little nesting dolls. In particular, he had various American football teams, both professional and college. Each was made to represent players of the teams with their team colors and names on the jerseys, as well as appropriately decorated helmets. Not only did he have every team we could think of, each team's dolls had the current players. Several of Art's children are OSU grads, so we eagerly asked if we could purchase two sets of the OSU football team nesting dolls. Unfortunately, he only had one set, but he asked us to wait just a few minutes and he would check his other store to see if he had any more there. Off he ran, and sure enough, in a few minutes, he returned with another set of OSU nesting dolls. He opened them up to show us they were the same players as in the first set. Of course, no tour of Moscow would be complete without a visit to Red Square. We disembarked our motor coach and walked from one end of Red Square to the other. Here we saw St. Basil's Cathedral, Lenin's Mausoleum, and the Gum Department Store. Both Art and I were struck by how small Red Square was. We remembered seeing the military parades on the news with tanks and thousands of troops marching through Red Square. Our impression was that Red Square was a massive place. In reality, it's about the equivalent of a New York City block. I was excited to see the beautiful St. Basil's Cathedral with its colorful onion domes. Unfortunately, our tour didn't take us inside the cathedral, but the outside was certainly impressive. Our tour ended in Red Square, and since we had some time before our next tour started, Art and I went inside the Gum Department Store. We were expecting a gray, dull, unadorned interior with generic shops. Instead, we entered a shopping mall with every high-end store imaginable, still decorated with colorful streamers and garland from the recent celebration of Orthodox Christmas. It was beautiful. That really blew our minds. That afternoon, we participated in a tour of Stalin's bunker. I guess because of our military background, Art and I found Stalin's bunker to be extraordinarily interesting. There was an elaborate set of tunnels built under Moscow, which is reported to have housed weapons and armaments in addition to acting as a way for the powers that be to easily get around Moscow without exposure. This was during the 1930s, prior to World War II. This bunker was built as a part of that project. Officially known as the Emergency Command Post of the Supreme Commander-in-Chief, the construction of the bunker was covert, built under the guise of a stadium. It was explained to us that in order to keep the construction of the bunker under wraps, all the workers who built the underground bunker were prisoners and, of course, were housed and otherwise kept separate from the workers building the stadium above. The tour takes about an hour and a half, and you only see a small portion of the entire bunker. There's a very large, round, ornately decorated conference room with a domed ceiling. In this room is a large table, which is wood with wood inlay. It's round, but without a center, and there was also an opening. So it's constructed to allow someone to be in the center and walk from person to person seated at the table. You'll also see Stalin's desk, a uniform, and a display of some of the items that were used during that time period. Art was excited to see the logarithmic ruler, aka a slide rule. There's a dining room located near the conference room where you can experience a typical Georgian meal, which was included with our tour. Stalin was from the country of Georgia, thus explaining the Georgian cuisine. That night was our special treat. We were going to see a performance at the Bolshoi Theater, Madama Butterfly. Neither Art nor I are big fans of opera, but we figured we could pretend to have a bit of culture, at least for a few hours. The theater lobby was expansive and accommodating, and we were able to check our coats at the large coat check. Within the Bolshoi, there are three performance stages, the historic, the new, and the Boris Pokrovsky chamber. 2 years prior to our visit, the Bolshoi began a major restoration of the historic stage. The project, funded completely by the government, was finally completed in 2011, and the estimates of the cost are anywhere from $688 million to $1 billion U.S. dollars. At any rate, it's now restored to its original imperial splendor, and the photos look stunning. The opera was to be performed on the new stage. Built in 2002, the seating area of the new stage is decorated tastefully and subtly. There were numerous boxes in the upper levels, as well as a large royal box at the back of the theater. There was a large crystal chandelier in the center of the ornately painted ceiling. On the stage was a sparse set. It turned out we were to see a modern interpretation of Madama Butterfly with traditional music but non-traditional staging. Shortly before the show was to begin, screens were lowered on either side of the stage. The lights went down, and we prepared to be transported to another world. Except we weren't. The set we saw prior to the show starting was the entire set. Not knowing the story of Madama Butterfly, we were completely lost, and the set nor the costumes provided us any clues as to what was going on. The screens on either side of the stage were used to translate the opera from Italian to Russian. Oops, we didn't speak either language. Long story short, we waited until intermission and decided to leave. We went to the coat room and asked the attendant to retrieve our coats. She was so nice. She tried in her very broken English to make sure we understood it was just intermission and the opera wasn't over. I was certainly glad we went. It was still quite an experience, and I can say I attended a performance at Moscow's Bolshoi Theater. We walked out of the theater and decided to head on over to Red Square to take some nighttime photos. The next morning, we awoke to snow. We were amazed at how quickly they had the roads cleared. The machinery they were using was fascinating. It reminded me of a big crab reaching out with its claws and pushing the snow into its mouth. The snow went up a conveyor belt and emptied into a big dump truck. As soon as the dump truck was full, it would pull away and another would take its place. It was quite the process. There were people out shoveling the last of the snow off the sidewalks, using the most primitive snow shovels I have ever seen. It was different, but they did the job, and it was done quickly. Our group walked over to the Kremlin to begin our tour. We waited outside in line for what seemed like quite a while. We visited several locations within the Kremlin walls, our first stop being the Armory Museum with its collection of jewels, crowns, and royal armor. Also on display in the armory are several Fabergé eggs, which are exquisite. The intricate details are so unexpected. There are multiple collections of the Imperial Fabergé eggs throughout the world, and they do occasionally go on exhibit. If you have the opportunity to see one, you won't be disappointed. After visiting the Armory Museum, we saw the Ivan the Great Bell Tower, a couple of cathedrals, and the 40-ton Tsar Cannon dating back to the 16th century. Lunch that day was on our own, so Art and I ventured over to the local McDonald's. There are some people in Russia who speak English quite well, but the average Russian doesn't. Not that that was unexpected. We found that when we usually go into a McDonald's, for the most part, we know what they have and can order. They usually know the American names for the products. Not the case here. We entered McDonald's and found it packed with people. I went and waited for a seat to come open while Art got in line to order the food. He finally got up to the counter to order, and no one behind the counter spoke any English at all. They had no clue what Art was asking for. A young man standing in line next to Art did speak English and interpreted. The order came out, was placed on the tray, and Art started out to the seating area to find me. As he was walking out, someone bumped into him, and one of the soft drinks, fortunately with a lid on it, fell over on the tray. Another person who was walking past Art just reached over, set the cup upright, and kept right on walking. That afternoon, we took a tour of the Moscow Metro. I know you may be thinking, why on earth would there be a tour of the Moscow Metro? It's for the architecture and artwork. There are sculptures, frescoes, and mosaics that are so interesting, and all housed within the subway stations. That afternoon, we had a little free time before our next hotel tour. After all, this was a working trip. We were able to get out and take some photos of Red Square with snow on the ground. We also had some time to visit Moscow's Tomb of the Unknown Soldier and watch the changing of the guard. Many major cities have such tombs, and it's always interesting to watch the ceremony of the changing of the guard. Each country puts its own unique twist on the ceremony, and it's always a moving experience. The last day of our stay in Moscow started with a visit to the Cathedral of Christ the Savior, the seat of the Orthodox Patriarch of Moscow and all Russia. The original church that stood on the site was built over a 44-year span beginning in 1839. Stalin ordered the destruction of the original church in 1931. His plan was to use this property to build the tallest building in the world at the time, the Palace of the Soviets, an administrative building of the Soviet government. On top was to be a 100-foot-tall statue of Lenin. Although construction did begin in 1937, his plans were thwarted by the German invasion in 1941. The church that stands on the site today is a resurrection of the original church built after the fall of the Soviet Union. It's the largest Orthodox cathedral in Russia and houses an upper and lower church, as well as a museum and meeting halls. This modern version of the original was constructed between 1995 and 2000 and offers a viewing platform with wonderful views of the city of Moscow. Our last stop in Moscow was the Novodevichy Convent and Cemetery. This complex was designated a UNESCO World Heritage Site in 2004. The walled convent, founded in the early 1500s, was where the aristocrats of Moscow sent their wayward daughters, sisters, and wives to keep them sequestered from the real world. There are several unique churches built in different styles within the complex. There is also a small cemetery, the necropolis of Novodevichy Convent, which was the coveted burial spot of Russian nobility. In 1898, the Novodevichy Cemetery was established outside the south wall of the convent. During the reign of the Soviets, this became the most high-profile cemetery in the Soviet Union. Many actors, writers, scientists, and other Soviet elite are buried here. I was surprised by the size and whimsy of some of the monuments. Moscow was a fascinating place to visit. I'll admit I had a few of my prejudices about the Russian people dispelled during this trip. Although the people of Moscow appeared somber, we found them to be kind and helpful. We were very pleased to learn that they did have a sense of humor and that they like a lot of the same things we Americans do. Our trip to Moscow was memorable for many reasons, but mostly because it's a place I never thought I would visit. I hope you enjoyed this episode, my last of season one. If you did, be sure to click the subscribe button so you don't miss the first episode of season two, which will be available in 2 weeks. For more inspiration, visit my website, everygreatadventure.com, where you can also read my blog and see my travel photos. Until next time, keep dreaming of your next great adventure.